Welcome to the Bike Pack Adventures Podcast. I am your host, Chris Panaski. This podcast was created so as to share the stories of bike tours, bike packers, and endurance racers from around the world as they embark on amazing adventures. Through their stories, you'll be able to learn the ins and outs of bike travel. You'll get insight into various countries and cultures, hear fantastic stories of their journeys, and through both mine and my guests' experiences, you'll learn about the pros and cons of specific gear, bikes, and bike setups. If you're new to bike travel and considering going on an adventure, I hope the podcast provides you with that extra little bit of motivation to make it happen. The Bike Pack Adventures podcast is proudly supported by Panorama Cycles, Redshift Sports, Tailfin Bikepacking Equipment, Race Day Fuel, and Full Cycle Ottawa. Their continued support allows me to focus my efforts on providing you amazing content. Now back to the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Bike Pack Adventures podcast. Before we jump into today's episode, I just want to do a little intro to it. And it is going to be all about the 2025 Canadian Shield Bikepacking Summit, the third annual summit, and just, you know, a little gratitude moment on my part for not just Joanne Steventon's help with this episode. She came to me with the idea saying, hey, don't you think it would be cool if we did this? And I said, if you're willing to run with it, I'm willing to do it, because I wouldn't have time throughout the weekend to make something like this happen. But it was so great to have somebody that has a history in journalism and marketing and whatnot to take on this task and help out. And it was really fun. We had to do a re-record of the episode because the audio had some issues, but we got it done and it sounds really great and it was super fun. One of the things we did talk about towards the end of the episode was the various sponsors of the summit. And I just wanted to also extend my regards to the companies that sponsor the podcast, but that also went out of their way to sponsor the summit. So that means a lot to me. It shows that they you know, they have faith in what I'm doing. They appreciate what I'm doing. And it's a really great thing. So those companies are Panorama Cycles, Tailfin Cycling, Full Cycle Ottawa, Redshift Sports, Ride with GPS, and Burt Shoes. So really excited to have them on board, not just with the summit, but also with the podcast. And I hope here's to many more. Aside from that, as I mentioned, I'm really thankful for Joanne and everything she did to help out with this. And as well, Serge Goway. He's one of the main volunteers every year. He does all the photography and it's amazing. And I know people are anxiously awaiting for me to send out the link with all the pictures he took. And that newsletter is going out real soon. But so I apologize for taking so long, but, you know, things have been delayed on my end and sometimes that's the way things go. But yeah, Serge is a good friend and a very, very dedicated volunteer that offers up his time and his expertise, and it's really, really appreciated as well. And of course, Mary Pierre Savard, who helped co-host the event this year, also led some discussions, really helped take a load off. Off my back. I tend to get really busy and spinning around, and it was just nice to know I had somebody in my corner that was willing to do things when I asked and help out as much as she possibly could. And then, of course, there are all the presenters, Louis-Philippe Landry, Samuel Lalonde-Marcon, and Carl Presseau. I couldn't have done it without you guys. Yeah, such good presenters. It was just phenomenal. Like, their stories, everything was so different. Carl's a really funny guy. He tells such good stories. And I always appreciate having him at the summits. And he's been there every year for me. So it's, once again, that's really, really beyond expectation. And it's just really great to be in the same community as this guy. And of course, the workshops. We had multiple workshops throughout the weekend. Yeah, we had a field repair or field maintenance workshop with Carl, planning logistics for bikepacking with myself. We had Ioana talking about kit and packing your bike, and those were phenomenal, as well as Jesse Jarjour from My Velo Fit talking about bike fitting for long distance adventures, as well as Mustafa and one of his crew working on a field maintenance derailleur and brake adjustment workshop. So those workshops, could not have done that without the help of the community. And that's what makes this event successful and so special. You know, people are involved, people are willing to participate and be there and engage, and it's awesome, and I really appreciate it. And lastly, my cousin, Timothy Vanier, he came up and DJ'd for us on Saturday night, got the party going, people were dancing, having a blast, we were playing some crazy games, I forget what it was called, but Kung Fu Panda, that was it. And yeah, it was just a really, really great weekend. That ended with a fantastic bikepacking adventure. So hope you guys like this episode. And of course, as we talked about later on, huge thanks to my wife for putting up with my shit for months on end and, you know, helping to do so much in the background with our daughter and keep things going around the house while I'm planning and collaborating and all that stuff. So thank you, Seema. And guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Before continuing on with the show, I'd like to thank some of our sponsors for supporting the podcast. Panorama Cycles is dedicated to backcountry cyclists that prefer gravel, snow, and off-road trails. They believe cycling is a catalyst for adventures of all sizes and that there's no need to travel across the world or to be a seasoned athlete to live epic outdoor adventures. Over the past three winters, I've been using the Panorama Chic-Choc's Carbon Fat Bike. It's a lightweight workhorse that not only handles the most challenging trails, but also provides all-day comfort for those extra big adventures. With internal cable routing and ample mounting points, the bike is ready to set off on any adventure. The Chic-Choc's 3 sports a modern geometry, is corrected for the addition of suspension, and has internal storage built into the down tube. If considering a high-quality fat bike that is made in Canada, the Panorama Chic-Choc's is a great option to consider. Lastly, don't forget to use the promo code BPA10 on any new bike purchase to save 10% at checkout by using the included affiliate link down in the show notes. I also get a small commission that helps keep the show running. I'd also like to thank Full Cycle Ottawa for supporting the podcast. Full Cycle has been a staple in the Ottawa biking community since it opened its doors in 1994, back when mountain bikes were still rocking 26-inch wheels. Known for their passion for cycling, the team at Full Cycle isn't just about selling bikes, they're also avid riders themselves. They live by the motto, we ride what we sell, and we sell what we ride. Full Cycle carries a fantastic selection of products from the best cycling brands on the market. Whether you visit them in store or shop online, their number one goal is making sure you leave feeling stoked on bikes. They carry a wide selection of bikepacking gear, as well as Panorama bikes, so if you're in the Ottawa area, this is a great place to test one out today. All right, everyone, welcome to the Bike Pack Adventures podcast. This is a little bit delayed, but that's just because of some technical issues. And the good thing is I get to have Joanne on the podcast again. So that's really cool. Although Great. It'll be the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
How are things?
Yeah, no, things are awesome. Yeah, no, it was fun the first time and I'm looking forward to doing it again. I guess we should explain that we tried recording this. And then the audio, we had some audio issues. So,
yeah, it wasn't.
We're giving it another go.
It wasn't up to par. So, we're just going to do it again. And I will try to get this one out ASAP. And yeah, this one's all about the summit, the 2025 Canadian Shield Bikepacking Summit, the third edition of the summit. And Joanne was awesome and went around the whole weekend talking to people and chatting and recording things. And so yeah, that's where we're at, I guess. Huh?
Yeah. If you were at the summit, I was the weirdo walking around all weekend with headphones and a microphone recording random little bits of audio. So and you're gonna get to hear it today. So
and what are we gonna talk about? To be here. What's the plan?
What is the plan? Well, I thought maybe we could just do a little walkthrough. Let's do a walkthrough of the weekend. We'll travel back in time and relive. I know it was a month ago now?
I guess it was a month, yeah.
Yeah.
Time flies.
And go, it does fly. And just go through, take people back. So people who were there, take them back. And then people who weren't there, just give them a taste of what it was like to be there. Because this is the third year of the summit. This is my second year going, and it is always such a really nice time, a great way to start off the season and get together with friends and make new friends.
And you had quite the adventurous, like you actually cycled out from home with some friends and cycled to the summit. Is that correct?
Yeah, we biked up from Ottawa, and you know, it was kind of a cool and rainy weekend. We had a really slow start to summer in Ottawa, and it was yet another cold, rainy weekend, but we did make the trip up, and it's so nice biking from Ottawa up to Wakefield because you get to come through the park, and then you cut through Chelsea and then ride up the Gatineau River to Wakefield, which is just so stunning and spectacular. And if you live in the area and you haven't done it yet, you have to, because there's really no excuse. It's flat.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And it's funny because we take it so much for granted, you know, like it's just there. I went and rode another rail trail last year and I was like, oh, this was not nearly as beautiful as I expected, just because I'm spoiled by like the serene beauty of like the Chelsea Community Trail and Gatineau River and Gatineau Park. And it's just phenomenal, this area.
Yeah. So I guess maybe the first little bit of audio, we started the weekend with some campfire stories, and that was hosted by Bivo. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, I believe it's Bivo. I always said Bivo, but I guess it's Bivo. I was corrected.
Insulated
at the
water bottles, amazing. And I love that they took this on. And we've talked about this a little bit, but just about how your sponsors are always really embedded in the event. And it's great for them because it's very targeted niche marketing. But they don't just show up and try and shill products. When they send people, I'd say most sponsors, they send people and then they take part and they become a part of the event. And I think that Keaton, who hosted the Campfire Stories, was so great to have around that weekend. So,
yeah, and for those that are wondering, these are the custom bottles we had at the summit. So they have the Canadian Shield Bikepacking logo engraved into them. And yeah, this one is going to forever live on the shelf.
No, Chris, that is a crime. That water bottle is light and it keeps water very cold.
I know.
Why would
I know.
Do that? It deserves better.
I have another couple for riding with.
Okay, fine. All right. So let's get started with we recorded two stories. So we're going to start with Daniel and then followed by Noel.
Okay. So my story is I was fairly new to bikepacking. I was on my like second season and I was doing the BT 700 by myself. I was on my second day of the route and I'm coming into the Bruce Peninsula. I'm sort of making my way up to Wyarton, aiming to sleep when my Garmin gives me an alert that there's a severe weather statement coming in. So I pull out my phone and I look and it's significant rain coming to hammer the whole peninsula. They're predicting like 60 millimeters a day. It's just a big, ugly red dot on the radar coming right for me. And it looks like it's kind of just going to clip the peninsula and move on. So I made the decision to cut out that sort of part of the trail. And then all of the single track and gravel that I'm supposed to be hitting and just kind of like book my way down off the peninsula and basically make my way to my next night's campsite. Hopefully out of way of the storm. So it becomes sort of a full-on time trial. I'm in the aero bars on the pavement. My 160 kilometer day at that point just became 230 kilometer day. And I book it basically around to almost Meaford. And I find a place to sleep, hoping I miss the storm. I wake up in the morning and I hear rain on my tent. So I pull out the phone and look, and the storm has changed direction in the night, and the big ugly red dot is bearing down right on me. So I pack all my stuff up as fast as I can, eat some food, look at the trail, cut out a whole bunch more gravel. I'm just going to head east and try and get out of the storm's path, and it just followed me. And when you're riding around Meaford, all that road basically turns into like wet clay, and it's slick and awful, and so I was having a hard time riding through that, so I cut out more hills, more gravel, made my way to Meaford, hopped on the rail trail, and headed to Collingwood, hoping to still escape the storm. It's not working, so I turned south, and I'm just going to follow the highway and try and get out as best I can. And I end up finding this town called Stayner. And I figure it's time to look for a place to sleep. And there is absolutely nothing. I find a guy who tells me the closest hotel is back in Collingwood, like 30 kilometers behind me. So I kind of look on Google, see what I can find. And it's like a 24-hour laundromat in Stayner and a pizza place that has like vegan pizzas. So my option now is to go to the laundromat and to do laundry all night and order pizza. But I got lucky because the pizza guy shows up and tells me that there actually is a bed and breakfast in that town. And it's run out of like these like nice old couple's house. So I go there and they were able to put me up. And they cook me like a fresh breakfast in the morning with like a homemade brownies, homemade jam, homemade ketchup, delicious home-cooked breakfast. Put my bike in the garage, so it was super great for them to put me up like that. But it was the next day, again, I'm riding down the highway, and it wasn't until that day at like 5 p.m. the sun finally peeks out between some like clouds. So 2 days, 60 mils rain each day, sun finally comes out, but it's still kind of raining. So I ended up having to sleep in a gazebo on the side of the trail in Palgrave. And yeah, it was like I woke up in the next morning and it was finally sunny. And I was able to sort of make my way back to the end of the trail somewhat safer than the last 2 days. And it was pretty good. It was kind of the big takeaway was like no matter how bad things get, just keep moving forward. And like a storm can only last so long. And once you're wet, you're waterproof. So you just keep on going, right?
Thanks, Daniel.
That is very impressive.
So I'm joining y'all from the U.S., but my actual like longest distance bike trip was a 3-month trip where I rode from my house in Baltimore up to Quebec and all through the Maritimes. And so this is just a little story about like a snippet of some of the magic that I experienced in one of those trips and the beauty of long-term travel like that, where you really kind of can go off course and like follow different whims along the way. And so this is one case where I did that. You know, I had great experiences meeting hosts and getting help along the way. A little bit about me, like I love live music. It's something that's been important in my life. And actually, a lot of people like come into bikepacking from backpacking, and I never did that. Like my camping experience was like camping at music festivals. Mm-hmm. I wanted to experience music on this trip, but I wasn't like really seeking it out or like planning my trip around it. But I found myself in PEI. I'm staying at this little hostel, and there's 3 different music festivals that weekend to choose from. So I'm like trying to decide, you know, very different which way to go. I ended up choosing this tiny little festival called Shake the Lake. Didn't really know hardly anything about it. There was various bands. There was going to be like a Grateful Dead cover band, which I like. So I was like, okay, I'll go to this spot. Not knowing who's going to be there. There was, I can't remember the specifics, but there was definitely like an issue with whether I could get a ticket or not, whether it was sold out. And I tried to contact people the night before, but I was sort of like, I'm just going to wing it and go on this adventure. I also didn't know like, is there going to be food there or drinks? Because it was like pretty grassroots thing. But I go to the store. I like didn't want to bring a bunch of food if I didn't need it, but I grabbed like what I would need to survive. Another little hack for the cargo net is bring an extra dry bag. And I bought a couple of beers, threw some ice in the dry bag, wrap it up, stick it under the net. So I started out on this adventure and I was starting to get kind of nervous of like, where am I going? What am I getting myself into? Like, is like everybody going to be like 20 years old and like, I like, you know, don't fit in here or, you know, are they all going to know each other? It's like this small town thing. And like, so I'm just like, I have a lot of anxiety about showing up. And I'm also just like been doing a lot of riding. I'm kind of thinking like, oh, this could be really nice to relax. It would be so great if there was just like a hammock that would be there that I could like lounge in this hammock. And I'm like dreaming of this hammock and riding out there. You know, it's probably like 40, 50 miles out there. Pretty anxious. I get there and everything ended up working out magically. I get there. I meet the people immediately who organized the festival. They're like, welcome. Yes, totally. Like, we're so happy you're here. You know, they're like, we might order some food tomorrow, but if you need drinks or anything, you can go like knock on this trailer door over there. And then it's like, set up your camp over here. Like, I feel like you'll make some good friends up there. So I go over, set up my tent, actually right next to someone who had been like on a long distance hike and had somehow found out about this festival and got picked up and ended up there. But within like 5 minutes of setting up my tent, I meet these two women, Wendy and Alana. They are like my age, instant best friends, and just like super welcoming. And so just gotten there, I'm now like sitting in this comfy chair. They've given me some local craft beer. I think they're like passing a joint over to me. And then they're just like, oh yeah, if you want to like relax even more, like we've got this hammock grove over here as like five hammocks. And I was just like, it was one of those moments, like I was thinking I got tears in my eyes of just like, I was having so many magical things happen to me on this trip, and it was just like manifesting really cool things. Ended up having this great weekend, made these great friends. I ended up making a connection with someone who was in one of the bands on this trip. And we ended up seeing each other like multiple times later. He came to Halifax to see me like weeks later on this trip. But yeah, so that was just like a reminder of so many things fell into place along this trip that were just kind of magical and manifesting of like when I was in the flow state, which I don't think happens unless you're like traveling for long periods of time, but that, you know, you can just kind of go with the flow and then like really amazing little things happen. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Great job. That was so great. Love the hammock canopy that just magically appeared.
All right. That is so good. And, you know, it was really amazing to actually just the courage to come out and tell a story, you know, in front of a bunch of people who are strangers, because it's the first night of the summit and it's just kicked off and really nobody knows anybody. And Noelle Battle, she came up as representing Bikepacking Roots, who I invited to the summit. And she also decided to go out and tell a story and share one of her stories. And that's just a really, really cool thing. And it takes courage. And I just really enjoyed, you know, people letting out some of that vulnerability that is behind bikepacking.
I agree. I would have been very nervous to do that. But the story, there were six storytellers in total. Mm-hmm. And Daniel's was hilarious. And then yeah, Noelle, it was so cool to have Noelle up from the States. I have attended a few of the Bikepacking Roots summits. They have virtual seminars, or they have had them in the past.
That's right.
And are really great if you've never bikepacked before, or you're just looking to maybe gather some intel and some tricks and tips. Look them up and look up their virtual seminars. Put them in your calendar. Usually they're in the evening while you're eating dinner. You can sit and watch them. But I picked up a lot of great information from those seminars. And I said to it, meeting Noelle was a bit like meeting a bit of a celebrity from the States when she was here.
Yeah, I've done a couple of them even on the bike trainer in the winter where they have the seminar on. And I just put the bike trainer, jump on the trainer and put it on and enjoy it while riding a bike.
Yeah. So we had the campfire stories. Those were great. And then I think maybe a few people stayed up a bit late that evening because the next morning there was an early ride. Someone, I don't know who scheduled that ride for 7 a.m., Chris.
Yeah. I always kind of like, well, you know, the weekend comes and goes really quick. And I like the idea of getting up a little bit early on the first day, first full day, and getting that ride in. I never get to do it because I'm busy with late registrants and making coffee for everybody and stuff. But in the second edition, people had asked me, for the Sunday, can we push it a bit? So I did. But for the Saturday, 7 a.m., there weren't that many riders out this year because it was kind of a rainy, muggy morning. And I think a lot of people, when you wake up in your tent and it's, you can hear the rain falling or everything's wet outside, and you're like, you know what? I think I'm just going to sleep in for an extra hour and enjoy this beautiful sound and whatnot.
You just perfectly described my morning experience. That was it. But I did drag myself out of bed and have a chance to chat with a few riders that were heading out. So let's take a listen to that.
Guys, get ready to head out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Isn't this ride supposed
this
to
start? This is the 7 a.m. ride.
It's like 7-ish. There's still a 7 in the time.
Where are you headed?
Just up the river a bit, I think.
The 22K route.
Yes, whatever that's how he refers to it. That,
yeah, I don't know.
It's a nice route, yeah. Where are you guys from?
Ottawa.
And I'm London, Ontario.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Cool.
So it's a long drive.
No kidding. So you're here to experience Quebec in all its glory on
yes,
this rainy morning.
On this rainy morning.
Yeah.
It was hard to get out of the tent.
That's why I'm just like getting out of my tent. And where are you from?
Calgary.
Okay. Did you come here for this?
I came here for a work conference next week. It just this was timed perfectly. So I just came a few days early.
Oh, great. Nice. It is a beautiful ride. It's nice, short, really lovely. Morning.
Morning. You riding?
No.
Do you mind taking a picture?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
No, I don't mind. Guys, I just woke up.
You know how that works?
Yeah.
People okay, without bikes. Wow, I think you should put bikes in there. Well, that's just me.
We're the hardest pour out here this morning.
Hang on, my garments are on.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
So there you go. Some out-of-towners heading out on an early morning bike ride, but not as early as planned.
Yeah, and getting to explore a bit, which is kind of what a lot of people are into as well. They wanna see the area, not just attend a summit. So that's a big reason for the morning rides.
And I love how that one gentleman tied the summit into a business trip. Very clever.
That's right, David. Yeah, he was coming for a conference and he was like, oh, the summit's the weekend before. So he booked his flights earlier, came and enjoyed the summit, and then went on to his conference, which is really neat.
Yeah. So they, again, that's what happens. So people will go out, they'll do the morning ride. People will do different distances. And then usually there's a stop at the bakery before they get back to the summit. And then we start with the workshops. But one thing we didn't mention was just the setting of the summit, Chris. It's so beautiful at Vorlage. And
yeah,
people have never been there.
I think it was a big step in the summit. You know, the first year was in Chelsea, was at the Meredith Center, which is a beautiful space, but it, you know, there's not a lot of like gravel right outside of Chelsea. You know, you got to go into the Gatineau Park, so everything's kind of spicier, or you're on the rail trail, which is nice, but it's not, you know, there's no hills and you don't have any of the vistas other than just the Gatineau River, which is beautiful. But also like, Vorlage itself, we were able to camp. It's a big wooden ski chalet. And we had, you know, one whole entire part of the place, which is phenomenal. And everywhere you look, it's just beautiful, you know?
Yeah, it's the perfect setting. It is really beautiful there. So anyway, we started the morning with some workshops. So the Saturday is usually filled with, you've got usually speakers lined up, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and I've modified every year. You know, this year had some big modifications. One set of presenters couldn't make it. They had a life change, and another one had a major breakdown of a vehicle a day and a half before. And so I pivoted, and instead of having presentations in the mornings or in all day on Saturday, we did some workshops later on. But we started off with a really good friend of mine, Louis-Philippe Landry, and he's a registered psychotherapist and leadership coach. And it was just really, really amazing to have him come on and share some of his wisdom, talking about mindset and failure. And what did you think, you know?
Great way to start the summit. But I also felt like it was a really great way to start the cycling season. Well, we're not at the very beginning of the season, but, just talking about taking on big challenges, and maybe you get to the middle of it and you decide that you don't want to go any further for whatever reason, and how to process that and in a productive way. I thought that was really useful. You know, like, why am I pushing myself if this isn't right for me right now? And I also really liked, he talked about, you know, what are you carrying today on the bike with you? That's the one thing that stayed with me. What am I carrying and what can I just let go of?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be cycling related. It could be other things that are happening in your life. And it was really interesting to look around the room and see everyone when he would say, close your eyes and
take a glance to see who's closed their eyes.
Yeah. And I liked it. I liked that. I think it exposed a lot of people who have never done therapy to a little, some therapy techniques.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really nice, actually.
Yeah. And everybody, I think, you know, I'm sure lots of people there felt a little vulnerable when all of a sudden you close your eyes and you're thinking like, are people watching me with my eyes closed? But nobody really was, you know, everybody was just kind of doing their thing and going through the steps with him. And I thought it was fantastic. You know, Louis-Philippe was supposed to come in 2024 and unfortunately got really sick and had to cancel. And so we pushed it to 2025. But the bulk of the meat and potatoes of the topic hasn't changed. You know, when we first started talking about it, I said, well, you know, I've experienced failure on the bike. As far as I'm concerned, it was failure. I quit the race. I lost my phone. I had mindset issues after that. And rather than push through, I just kind of gave up and struggled with that for a while, you know, and he had some similar things happen. And then other people out there, it's just so much that happens in bikepacking that if it's your first step, it feels like a lot of steps. And so there's fear that way as well. So we kind of thought it tied all in well together and how to address the people that already compete or race or ride or bikepack and those that are yet to do it, but also probably struggle with very similar problems.
Yeah, I have a listener request, and that is to have Louis-Philippe on the podcast to maybe talk a little bit about what he spoke about at the summit.
Okay.
I think people would really
Louis-Philippe like on the that. Podcast again, you mean? Because he was on before.
Yeah, he's been on just once before?
Yeah, just once. So
not enough.
Yeah, we'll get him on again. We'll have to get him on then. Oh. Yeah.
So, and then Louis-Philippe also did one of the breakout sessions in the afternoon.
No, that was on Sunday morning. Yeah.
Okay, right.
We'll come back to that.
That's when we did those. Are there any other highlights for you?
I think the icebreakers have been really good, like both last 2 years. You know, last year we did this like, you know, bikepacking bingo. And then this year, what did I call it? I forget, but it was like bikepacking race quiz or something like that.
Yeah,
I forget.
Yeah, it was good.
So it was just, you know, a bunch of events and you had to try to like figure out where they start or what country they're in and just a way to get people to meet new people they don't know, you know, and that's a big part of the goal of the summit, but also it kind of addresses right earlier on people that don't know anybody at the summit. Now they've made a friend and then they've worked in a group with them. And I thought that was really brilliant on my part. Good job, Teacher Chris.
It was. I have to say, I do not love icebreakers. I dread them. When I see them on an agenda, I just cringe and I don't want to be a part of it. But last year's icebreaker was awesome, the bingo. And because you had a bingo card full of different things and you had to go around the room and match people up with the different things on the bingo card.
Yeah, somebody who's ridden the Tour Divide, somebody who rides, I don't know, whatever, rides a bike with suspension. I don't remember what the things were, but yeah.
Yeah.
Those kind of things.
And that is so fun. And then this year too, just working, trying to solve the quiz with people that you don't know. I definitely, in both of those, met people who I ended up just spending part of the weekend with.
Yeah.
So yes, good work. Flexing that teacher muscle.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's hard. I got to keep that game up because otherwise people will be like, how are you a teacher? You can't even do an icebreaker. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was, and such good people. I have made so many friends at that summit. People I met last year who I ride with this year. And then we met new people this year.
That's really cool.
And meeting them or you meet them at the summit and then you see them at other events. So like the Log Driver's Wall, who's Grand Depart or during the ride or things
or the
like
BT
that.
BT 700. Yeah, that's I like it because somebody like David Tuttle, who I've known for a while, you know, it's like he comes every year. So it's also I get to see him and we get to catch up.
Yes.
And he's such a nice guy. Like he volunteers in Mexico and he's retired, but they go and build houses in Mexico every year for a month for poor people. And as part of his church.
Shout out to David.
Yeah. My wife has a friend that lives in the same city that he was going to. So she actually sent a care package of like Persian goods and stuff so that he could drop it off to them. And, you know, so it's just really so nice, you know.
He was very supportive last year. I met David last year at the summit, and I was preparing for the butter tart. It was my first big bike packing ride, and he was very generous with his time and his knowledge and just talking to me about that route and things to prepare for.
Yeah.
And he also saved, I have to say, he saved my boyfriend Neil at the Log Driver's Waltz, the spring rally.
Okay.
And Neil's sleeping pad had a hole in it. And it was so cold that night. Once again, it's always cold during that event. And he would have frozen if he had had to sleep on the ground. Anyway, David had a patch, you know?
Oh,
he's
nice.
Always there for you.
Yeah, yeah. He's good. He's good stuff. Yeah. So I think it's really great. Like just the connections that people make, you know, if there's one thing I think about the summit and the reason I do this is to build the community. And I feel like it's, you know, it's happening. And every year there's 10 or 15 extra more people at the summit. And, there's a bit of growth and, word is spreading, which is really fun. It's fun to see where people learned about the summit too.
Mm-hmm. And one thing to add just before we move on too, mm-hmm. is that there's a place for everyone there. Like you don't have to be a racer. You don't have to be an FKT person. You don't have to, if you are riding a basic bike and you just want to learn about bike packing, there's a place for you there. And you will be welcomed.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And, you know, I think also like some people might think that it's all young racers as presenters, but realistically, like most of the participants are 40 plus and presenters are also in that kind of category. It's a growing sport and it's very, very, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
It's very age friendly. No matter it's what age friendly. You are, there's a place for you in bike packing.
Yeah.
All right. So then, okay. So first day, great speakers.
We had Samuel Lalonde Marcon after lunch, and he was like, he has done some amazing expeditions across Canada in the winter.
You know what I just have to say about that guy, slow down. All right, we get it. You've seen Quebec. Man, he has ridden so much of that province.
It's
when
unreal.
His map came up on the screen, it blew my mind. I don't know. And then also the winter riding, because he's not a fair weather person.
No, he likes to go for this full on suffering. Yeah.
Yeah. But do you think he suffers or does he love it?
I think he loves suffering.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's definitely days where he's like, why am I doing this to myself? But then after, it's like any bikepacking adventure, you know? You finish it, you're sore, you're tired, you're grumpy, but like 2 days later, you're like, that was amazing. And I think that he has that same thing with like on a daily basis, you know? He'd be like, wow, yesterday was really hard. That sucked. And 2 hours later, he's like, hey, I can't wait to do that again. I don't know. That's the feeling I get.
And then a fun fact about him as well is that he played tuba in actual orchestras. Yeah. It was a tuba, correct?
Yeah, he's a tuba player by trade. Wild.
In orchestras in New York City. That's phenomenal. But he doesn't do that anymore because he's too busy riding his bike. And I think that's great.
Yeah.
And I think he definitely lit a fire in some of us to start exploring Quebec and some of the great routes there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are there any in Quebec that you want to ride, Chris?
There's so many. I would love to do everything he's done. I think those all look so phenomenal. But I would really like to ride the Trans-Labrador route. It looks really cool. Yeah. I know it's paved now. So maybe one day, if I got a couple weeks and I can get away and I have no responsibilities, I could just get out there with my gravel bike and ride it. That'd be fun.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I won't be seeing you in the winter. Okay. I'll be inside where it's warm.
No, I'll do that one in the summer.
Okay, good.
Yeah. And I wanted to do the Route Blanche, actually. He talked about the Route Blanche. I think he was maybe his friend that he rode it with. I think they were the first two people to actually ride the Route Blanche that we know of, you know? And it's a roughly 500 kilometer ice road that's made in the winters, connecting like a bunch of North Shore of the St. Lawrence River villages as you head towards Labrador. And I was actually, I'd hoped to do it a couple of years ago, but I it wasn't as cold enough and there was a lot of water and some parts were closed. So I had to pull the plug and it hasn't come up as a possibility since because I have other commitments and that is the way it is.
Life.
Yep.
Well, it's not going anywhere.
No. Well, maybe, you know, global warming and all.
Okay, fair enough. Moving on. So Saturday, great speakers. Then Sunday were the workshops.
Yeah, well, we ended Saturday with a couple workshops and I think we had one set of we had one set of workshops. So there was sleep setups, tire fixing with Carl, and my VeloFit did I believe that was Saturday. They did the bike fitting for endurance riding and bike packing. Yeah.
Yeah, I attended the tire workshop and I thought it was amazing how many people were there. Lots of experienced riders who still want to learn more about tubeless tires. You can never know too much, I guess, about how to fix a puncture.
Absolutely. You know, you'd be surprised. Like, I mean, I've biked lots. I do thousands of kilometers every year. But when it comes to fixing tires, I'm still pretty amateur at it. I mean, I know how a plug works. I don't think I've ever actually used one. I still don't know how those CO2 cartridges work. I mean, I know CO2's in there, but I still manage to screw it up a lot of times. So I always just rely on having Carl with me. He's like, some people pack a toolbox, I pack a Carl.
That's an amazing strategy. I would think, yeah, and he's the person you want with you for sure. Well, and then the next day, so there was for the breakout groups, Louis-Philippe, he did another workshop with a big group of people. I think you were in that workshop.
Yeah, and I was there.
I sat in. Mary-Pierre Savard ran a workshop to talk about just safety on the trail, kind of like a female forward like talk.
When I set up the idea of the workshops, I thought, you know, we could take some time and really dive into some of the questions people have, like open forum style, you know. So I asked Mary-Pierre and she was like, I'm totally down for it. I asked LP. He, of course, said yes as well. And then it was kind of try to figure out how we can have two different group talks, you know, that don't have to be really based around one gender. But, you know, I knew I was hoping that Mary-Pierre would take that chance to answer some of those questions or discuss issues that arise with women in bikepacking. And I think I'm sure there was some crossover that is, you know, fits a lot of people's needs. I think one of the areas was like talking about, like, you know, leaving home when you have kids and stuff. And I think that was in the initial thing. I don't know if we got talked about, but like, how do you make that time away? But that could apply to everybody. So
we did talk about it a little bit. So I have a little bit of audio from that conversation with Mary-Pierre, but I think it's important just to talk about some of her accomplishments.
Sure, go on.
Packer, because she is very impressive. She did participate in the Silk Road race last year.
Yeah.
And she runs, she talks a little bit about the Florida Divide. So she talks a little bit about that. So she completed that a few months ago. But she runs the Fin Garnet, and I believe it runs out of Montreal.
Yeah.
And it's a group for female, trans, non-binary folks who want to get out on bikes and learn a little bit more. They're so cool. I follow them. If you don't follow them on Instagram, you should.
Yeah.
And I've following them for a little while, and I really appreciated the opportunity to hear from Mary-Pierre and hear about some of her experiences. So here is a little bit from that workshop.
The goal of this discussion, what is it? I wrote it. I think first it's maybe to normalize the fact that we have some fear. We have some question, we have some insecurity, and we have some discomfort. It's okay, it's normal, but how can we be more confident in situation X or Y? I will start with, for me, the most challenging, for me as a woman, it's a lot of fear in different situations. For example, camping by myself. When I start bikepacking in 2011, I decided to go to Central Asia. I went to Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Uzbekistan as my first bicycle trip. My thought was, let's start big, so I will know if I like it or not. So I had no experience, so I learned a lot. But at this time, I was... You need to wild camp, you need to steel camp, because that's the way it works. And over this experience, I realized I need to do this because we have to steel camp, but I'm not comfortable. And it took me 4 months, it took me the entire trip to realize, hey, it's okay if I'm not comfortable in steel camping, but that's 4 months. To name this fear, that's a lot. And maybe it's not normal. Maybe it should be easier to name our fear. But that was my experience. That was the time that I took. And after this 4 months, I was, okay, I love this trip, but I was always super scary when I had to steel camp and never feel comfortable. And so... For my next trip, next time, next project, I will organize myself differently. I didn't know anything about bicycle, cycle touring, I knew that, okay, there's some safety concern regarding politics, the country, the weather, but about biking, I don't know how does that work. So that's, I went there with an innocence, je sais pas, naivety, which helped me maybe, because if I have all those fear prior to the trip, well, actually, if we just listen people around us, we won't do anything in life. Someone that I know from social media contact me last summer. She said, I want to go to Kyrgyzstan, but my boyfriend said it's too dangerous as a woman alone. My first question was, did your boyfriend went there recently to be able to tell you this? She said, no, he never. But he never went there, he never went in the area. I was, maybe you should find someone who recently went there, maybe a woman, to... No, exactly, because it's easy. People will always say, maybe, I don't know if it's more for women, but people, they will say, it's dangerous, it's dangerous, it's dangerous. Did you ever did this? If I know that someone knows where I am, I feel really relief. Yes, it's, yes, for me, it's now I never travel without letting someone know or... by the position or, and something, but it can be, for example, if you take part in a race and you need to be followed by a tracker. That's my, because in the last year, I went to the Silk Road Mountain Race where I had a tracker. And I also went to for the Florida Divide in March where I had a tracker also. And that's funny because people, they will maybe think, oh my God, Kyrgyzstan is so dangerous. How did you manage? You, and over there, I steel camp, actually. I steel camp during the race. But for me, that was a safety because it's a big race. The people, they check on you. It's really, I had no problem to steel camp over there in this situation of the race. And I have no problem to know that, okay, anyone anywhere in the world know where I am sleeping tonight. I never felt uncomfortable with this situation. But in Florida, couples of months later, I was extremely afraid. At first, I was, okay, over there it's different. I cannot steel camp. People are really like their land, and it's really, really by the book, people, they carry guns and the political situation and everything. And people, they are maybe more aware of how does it work with the spot tracker. So anyone, there's a lot of people in Florida, anyone can...
side to being tracked 24/7 with a precise location.
So yeah. My conclusion is that I was, for this trip in Florida, I stopped the tracker maybe a couple of kilometers before the
setting up camp.
But sometimes I don't know where I will stop for camping, so I cannot stop my tracker before. And so it's not easy to find the balance. Okay, do I am comfortable that everyone know my position? Yeah, in U.S. A lot of people camp at the back of the church and the fire station. It's really common. It's totally normal. And often there's some also water, tap water, electricity, and the people. The philosophy is that, well, someone told me this in Florida. So God accepts everyone. God welcomes everyone. So you're allowed to stay there. Yeah, because Jesus was a traveler.
All right. That was so cool. Yeah. I mean, I was over in Louis-Philippe Landry's session, and so I didn't really get to see what was happening over there, but I did hear lots of laughs. So that's seemed like it was a really great conversation. And, you know, about the Fin Garnot, they actually are registered as a not-for-profit. So that's really cool too. Like any money they bring in goes back into the community, which is exactly what people try to do that are passionate about something. And every year I donate a couple tickets as well to their charity event as a fundraiser so that people can come to the summit as well, which is kind of a fun combo. And I should also add that she was the co-MC this year. So she had volunteered to help, and I said, hey, would you like to be co-MC? Although I need to work on letting people, you know, do their thing more freely. And she was just like, there was times where she's like, oh, why don't you just do it, Chris? Because it seems like something that you should talk about. And so I'm learning, I'm trying to grow, but it's tough. It's tough to hand off the reins.
Yeah, for sure. Well, she did a great job.
Yeah, she's wonderful. Yeah, so what else?
Where do we go next? Well, I think another thing that you and I have talked about a little bit, and we talked about it at the beginning when we first started, was just your sponsors and how great the sponsors are for this event. I mean, incredible prizes. At the end of the weekend when you do the prize giveaways from the sponsors, and how nice it is to have them so embedded in the event. And then there was one though this year who, I mean, they're all special, but there was one who I feel is the very special, and that's Brendan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he came with his company, his freshly launched company, Khaled.
Yeah.
And he was at the event last year.
As a participant.
Right?
Yeah.
As a participant. And last year there was a bike show and tell where we went around in a circle, and everyone, people who volunteered just showed their bike setup. And so he was there with all of his homemade bags that he had made with his mother's assistance. And they were very good. And then shortly, I guess in the fall, he started making them and he started selling them.
Mm-hmm. I think he had people reaching out and saying, hey, like, I really like your bags. Like, would you be able to help me out? And so he started making and selling bags. And then he just kind of grew his craft from there as well, because it takes time to, you know, you get better and better. Practice makes perfect. And now his bags are really sweet.
Yeah. You walk into some bike shops in the city and then there's this big, colorful, beautiful wall with his bags, and he's done such a good job building that business, and he's leaned right into it, and he's doing extremely, and the bags are great. Like, they're not,
you won a set, didn't you?
I did win a set, and I considered myself to be I was so happy. I felt so lucky to win those bags because they're really well made. Mm-hmm. He spent a lot of time prototyping and building and rebuilding the bags to make sure that they're perfect. So anyway, I sat down with Brendan just to learn a little bit more about what the past year has been like for him, and to learn a little bit more about Khaled and his bag business. So here's that.
So my name is Brendan. I'm the owner of Collad, which is essentially a Sona Venture Gear company based in Ottawa. So I make bike bags, frame bags, handlebar bags. It's just been over a little over a year since I started sewing. I started selling back in September. So it's been an interesting journey. We're currently in, I say we, but it's me. I'm currently in two bike shops in Ottawa, Quick Cranks and Full Cycle. So two of the biggest ones. So I'm happy for that.
Yeah, you say it's been quite a journey. You were actually here last year before you even launched your business. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, exactly. So I actually won a ticket last year through the raffle Chris was hosting. So it was my first time last year, and it was the bike show and tell that happened on the evening of the first day. And I had some new bike bags I had designed myself and my mom as well. So I was able to talk a bit about that. And the support I received here was great. People were telling me to sell them, which I wasn't comfortable at the time selling them. But yeah, I was here last year talking a bit about them. Now I look back at those bags and I'm a bit like, what was I doing? But a year later, here we are.
And this isn't your full-time job. What do your days look like now?
So yeah, this is not my, I'm the only part-time employee at Collad, therefore the only employee. I work a 9-to-5, so I'm a public servant as well. So I work that 9-to-5 and then I come home and Collad is my, I won't say 5-to-9, but my 5-to-midnight basically. So I say midnight because I have an industrial machine, so it's pretty loud. So my 5-to-midnight, that's what I'm doing. It's a good thing. I like watching TV and sports, so I just have the TV on and just able to run through all the sewing products I have to do.
Can you maybe talk a little bit about your journey as a sewist? How did you learn? What does that journey look like for you?
Yeah, so my mom is a big sewer. She has her own company. So she does project bags for cross stitchers and their projects. So she started actually to pay for my schooling a couple of years ago. And her mother, my grandmother, taught her how to do it. My grandmother died when I was 2, but she was able to teach my mom everything before she passed. Ever since then, my mom's been sewing. She's repaired our clothes. She's made even down to my hockey pads back in the day and any Under Armour that we had, she repaired. I joined university in 2018. So she started the company in 2017, basically to start paying for my school. She's the one that actually made my first frame bag. So I was telling her what I wanted. It was a bit of experience for her because her bags are a lot different than a frame bag. So just thinking through the process. So the frame bag I actually talked about last year was created by herself. And then she taught me how to sew. So I still call her on the daily with any FaceTime or messages asking for some advice or any suggestions. But the products I'm creating are just so crazy now that not even she has the advice, but she taught me everything. She always tells me my grandmother would be proud of me if she was here today. So she's happy for me.
Well, it must be really nice for your mom to see you and see you succeed, and you're in a bunch of bike shops now. Mm-hmm. What does she have to say about that?
I'm the oldest of 5 kids my mom has, so they brought us up really well. I have my own company now. My brother under me, who's my Irish twin, 11 months apart, he's a carpenter. He has his own business now. My third brother, he just got into engineering at Concordia, and then my youngest brother is in the military. And then, of course, the only girl is going to paralegal school. So she's very proud of us. She's always reposting me on Instagram and Facebook, telling her friends about me. So she's very proud of us.
And with making and designing the bags, you were explaining yesterday that you prototype and you test. And what have you learned over the past year since you started making the bags?
That practice makes perfect, and that you're not always going to get it right on the first shot. There's a lot of bags in my shop that are not usable. Often the hardest parts to get right come at the end. So you have to build the entire bag. And then, for example, the collar of my stem bags, that took a long time to prototype just because it has the one-handed drawstring. So if it's too tall, you don't have enough leverage. If it's too short, it doesn't close all the way. So there's a lot of bags that the collars are different sizes just because it took so long to prototype it. Now I know it's a certain height that it could close all the way with the leverage and open all the way. But prototyping is a bit expensive because you don't want to use a different type of fabric or some sort of scrap fabric, because you want to make sure that the fabric you're going to use for the bags, EcoPack or Kidora, is exactly what you want it to move, exactly how you want it. So prototyping has been crucial to my business, not only for the stem bags, but the frame bags. The frame bags are a bit harder to prototype because they take so long. But I usually prototype bags for my bike. So I have about 5 frame bags for my bike. They're all prototypes. They're all different strategies, all different techniques. I see stuff online. I'm like, oh, that's how they did it. That's interesting. So I try that out, down to like how we hide the zipper in the panels. So if you actually look in the frame bags, the zippers aren't visible at all. So they're hidden between two pieces of fabric. But it looks simple, but it's really not simple when you're building it, right? So you got to like flip it inside out, put the two panels together, and then reverse it. So it's a lot more complex than it looks.
When you go into a bike shop and you see the Khalid bags, they do stand out. They're beautiful. They're so colorful. But what sets you apart from your competition? What makes these bags different and maybe better?
Yeah, it's a bit surreal seeing my bags in shops and people riding around them. I bike past people. I still bike. I still have time for it. I bike past people and I see my bags on their bike. And if you hadn't come last year or you didn't follow me on social media, you wouldn't know who I am. So like some people pass me every day and like they have my bags on their bike. So it's pretty cool to see. The reason why I started sewing is because I really wanted to get into bikepacking and I wasn't worried about spending the money. It was more, I want to get it right. So I don't want to spend $100 on a stem bag if I don't know that's what I'm going to use it for or if it's going to be useful for me. So that's why I started sewing. And I still have that mission and objective for my company. So I want to make it accessible for people who are coming into bikepacking so that they could figure out what they want and eventually come back to me for even more customizable orders, such as frame bags or handlebar bags. So the stem bags are very entry level. It allows people to test something out and figure out what they want at a lower price. But also, my stem bags are bikepacking oriented. So you'll see they're a lot bigger or larger in size just because they're not meant for smaller water bottle, or they could hold smaller water bottles, but they're also made for Nalgene, stuffing all your food and all your tools. So it allows you to have a bit more room when you're bikepacking.
And what's next for you and your business?
Stem bags have been the most popular, but now I'm taking on frame bag orders. You won't find them on my website, but I've received a lot of messages through Instagram. So I'm taking on frame bag orders now. Frame bags are a bit different. Everyone is different. Every frame is different, down to the size of the frame and the bolt mounts and whatnot. So over the next couple of months, I'll be working on a lot of frame bag orders. They'll probably become the more popular option. We're starting to see that people were a bit hesitant about frame bags because they wanted room for their water. But now that I offer the stem bags and the frame bags as an alternative, so they can put their water on the handlebar and then have more room in their frame for a frame bag. So that's what I'll be working on the next couple months.
Cool. Well, it's been so fun to see your business grow, I have to say. I think all of us who were here last year and saw your presentation and now we've seen you blossom into this awesome little business. It's so cool. You said you still have time for cycling. So do you have any big adventures lined up for this summer?
Yeah, I'll start off by saying I really appreciate everyone's support in Ottawa. Without the biking community, it wouldn't be possible to have this company. This summer, I was supposed to be doing the Demi Log Driver's Waltz in the end of August. But my mom is actually going to be at a convention here for her shop. So I'll be helping her out at that. But I'll probably be biking Ottawa to Montreal this year because my parents are from Montreal. So my partner will meet me down there with my dog and I'll end up biking there. So I haven't done it before, so we'll see how it goes.
What about a bag for your dog so you can carry your dog on your bike and just throwing it out there?
I was actually thinking of getting a trailer for my dog, but she hates bikes. So she's a street dog from Kentucky. So I adopted her 3 years ago. She's terrified of bikes. So, and if she runs with me on the bike, she actually runs in front of the wheel. So we'll keep her away from the bikes for now.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. This is great.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Brendan.
Oh, that was so cool.
Our guy.
Yeah, I'm so stoked. Man. I'm really, really happy to see like his growth, you know, and like how he's become such a big part of the bikepacking community from 2 years ago, not even bikepacking, to 1 year ago, like having just some homemade bags because he couldn't, you know, quote unquote, afford buying bags and like building a whole entire bike set of bags. So he just made his own, and that's really neat. And yeah, the bike shops that you referred to in the city, Full Cycle and Quick Cranks, we're both sponsors of the summit as well, which is really neat. It's just kind of fun to see that full circle involvement from the community itself.
Yeah, and a lot of returning sponsors, a lot of great. So who did you have? Can you remind me who was there this year? So Full Cycle.
So yeah, Quick Cranks was the main sponsor. And they gave out a sweet bike, a DaVinci Cobain mountain bike, which is what Dominic Menard rode from Victoria to Ushuaia. So it's really, really great bike. Panorama Cycles was back. They've been there every year, as well as My Velo Fit. So I just love their support. And their bikes are really amazing. Like, his bikes are made for bikepacking. They're in from Quebec, and they're beautiful. You know, they're just really
the
nice.
The panorama setup is, it's like an art installation in the room when they're there and they have all their bikes and everyone just kind of stands and admires them. They're so beautiful.
Yeah. And there was a winner of one lucky person won a Panorama Cycles complete steel frame set. And
my boy, Will.
That was Will. And so he's already making plans for that build and it's exciting. It's like, he's like, I hope it's all, everything will be ready and good to go. And I hope to be showing it off at the summit next year, which is really, really cool.
Yeah. It'll be a big day when Will gets his Panorama bike.
Yeah. And my VeloFit, as I mentioned, they were just like in a major cycling, I think it was road.cc or something. I was reading an article and Dana from my VeloFit came up as, because they created the petition against this narrow, you know, this limit on gravel handlebar sizes for UCI.
Oh,
and
cool.
They started a petition saying this is wrong because not only are all humans different sizes and 40 centimeters might not fit everybody, but women in particular, like, how can you put this limit? Like, that's too big a bar for a lot of women out there to have comfort on a bike. And that was very cool. So it's neat to like see my VeloFit getting mentioned in worldwide news in that way.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know, my VeloFit has like an online bike fit platform, and it's very cool, very easy to use. And everybody that came to the summit is going to be getting a code for free enthusiast fit. So that's very fun.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. And and again, just how everyone from all of those businesses were part of the event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Owen from Full Cycle, who was there last year, shows up and he
rides in every morning from Ottawa. I love it.
Yeah. And so that's a nice, that's a good feeling to know that you aren't.
Yeah. And we had like Memento Cycles was there as well. And last year, Eliane Trudeau was presenting and presented a real tearjerker of a presentation that, you know, made everybody feel real deep down about, you know, some of the challenges she's had to go through in her life and just some fantastic accomplishments. And what a beautiful brand as well. Like the bikes they make are gorgeous.
So beautiful. Yes. And they won again at the Philadelphia Bike Show? So 2 years in a row now. What an incredible accomplishment for that team of builders. So congratulations to them. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see them having that success.
Yeah. And one thing that's really cool too, you know, we're talking about the sponsors, but it's a big thing. You know, they can't run an event like this without sponsors and they're fantastic. You know, companies like Redshift, Old Man Mountain, Ride with GPS, they've year after year, they keep coming back and they still, you know, they give out free memberships, they give out gift cards or prizes. And it's phenomenal because they're all really good products, you know? Just really, really happy to have them coming back and showing this continued support.
Yeah, super generous with the prizes. And for anyone who wins a prize, which is most people, like there are a lot of prizes to go around. Not everyone walks away with a prize, but a lot of people do. And that's money that we're saving. Mm-hmm. You know, the feed bags I got from Khaled, that's almost $200 I don't have to spend on my setup to have on my bike. And that makes a really big difference. Or anyone who, I mean, whoever won the Redshift or the tail fin package. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, huh? what a pile of bags. Ugh. Yeah,
he had to come up twice. He had to come up twice
kept forgetting
to take
pieces.
Away all this stuff.
Yeah, Pierre, he actually spent the week before the summit bikepacking and parked at my house. And so then the night before, I think it was a Thursday before going to the summit, he messaged me. He said, everything's wet. Like, can I crash in your garage or something? And I was like, absolutely. So he had everything set up and out. We did some laundry, I think, if I remember correctly. And just a really, really nice guy. So yeah, he was very excited because
he was a very sweet,
very
sweet
nice
man.
Guy.
Yeah. I like it when the nice guys and gals and people, when they win, that's nice.
Yeah.
So, and then sadly though, the weekend had to come to an end, but for some people, it wasn't the end.
Yeah.
It was just the beginning.
Yeah. This year I decided to, backload, I guess, the Canadian Shield Grand Depart onto the summit or onto the end of the summit. thinking that it's also a great way for those that are interested or want to take a little bit of time off to just take all that motivation from the weekend and go ride their bike for, you know, 1, 2, 3 or more days. And it was really, really cool. There was about 13 people lined up, including myself and Serge, the photographer, the amazing photographer that he is. And I decided to stick with him because I knew I was really tired. And I was like, if I try to stick with anybody else, I'm going to explode. And it's going to be miserable. But we had a fantastic ride. We did the 250 together. I created the 250 route as with the idea that, you know, people that are gravel riders might be wanting to try out bike packing. But, you know, 400 kilometers is long. So by doing a 250 with minimal single track, they get a really good experience of what it feels like. And it was popular.
Tell us a little bit about the route.
Well, the routes, plural. There is a 250, a 400, a 900, and an 1150 kilometer route. But mostly, I mean, they're all in Quebec through the Outaouais region, Laurentian Mountains. Some of them, the 400 and up, go through a lot of the ski hills and their trails and some mountain bike trails. And I like mountain biking, so I like to put those in there, but it definitely punishes the legs. So it definitely not an easy bike packing route. Now the 250 definitely has rolling hills, but none of that single track. So I think it's a really great intro to bike packing.
Yeah, I rode some of those trails last weekend and on a mountain bike.
Where did you go?
And it was fun. Up to Mont Saint-Marie.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah.
And, but the thought of doing it on a loaded bike it definitely would have been a different experience.
Yeah. So, and the same thing, you know, the Mont Saint-Marie section, I put it in the route, but there's a control on the Ride with GPS file that says, if you're not a confident mountain biker, like take your time or just skip it, you know, like unless you're aiming for an FKT and you need to hit every single inch, if it's not something that you're going to be comfortable doing, skip it or, you know, get off your bike and walk it. Yep.
Yeah.
And I rode those trails with Megan Hakkinen when she rode the Canadian Shield 400 a couple of years ago. And she walked a lot of those switchbacks and stuff because she's not a mountain biker. She's a road biker, gravel biker. And her comfort zone said, walk those trails or like walk those little bits. And she did and had a fun time. Yeah.
There is no shame in walking your bike. No. That was the best takeaway from one of those bike packing routes virtual seminars I attended. I wrote that one down. Yeah. No shame.
And she just talked recently about, she just finished the Hellenic Mountain Race and won it in the women's category. I think 9th overall. And she ate dirt coming down one of the hills there. And it was like right where there's a photo checkpoint. So there's some pretty epic pictures of her crashing. So she's like, walking is fine. You can still win races and you can, you know, you don't have to be an expert at every aspect of biking to do it, you know?
Yeah. That's so cool. Well, I got a chance to speak to one of the riders. I spoke to Nico before he set out on, I believe, the 400 kilometer route.
He did do the 400, yeah.
Yeah. So here is Nico, fresh and full of energy before he sets out on the Canadian Shield bike packing route.
My name is Nicolas Frappé-Allaire. I'm about to do the Canadian Shield 400 kilometer route. And yeah, it's going to be fun.
What made you decide to take this one on?
Mental health reasons, I guess, just needing to be away from home and responsibilities for a few days and wanting to challenge myself.
Will this be your longest route?
No, I have done the Log Driver's Waltz, the half route last year. This will be the longest route I will have done alone.
Okay, and how are we feeling about that, Nico?
I'm a bit nervous. I'm really excited. I can't wait to see how it's going to go. I packed a million snacks and a lot of food and a lot of water, so I'm pretty hopeful that I'll make it through.
Do you have any like secret weapons in your bag or any treats?
I brought all of the ramen that I could stuff in my hydration vest, and I have a cotton sweater that I'm going to be wearing at night in case it ever gets cold. I'm a terribly cold sleeper, so that's pretty much it.
Do you know what to expect on this route? Like, are you going into it cold? Have you done a lot of planning? What do we know about this ride?
We know it's a mountain bike ride. We know it's a lot of single track. It's going to be technical. It's going to be muddy, and it's going to be wet from the previous day's rain. So, yeah, it's hoping it'll be doable and not too much hike a bike.
Every time when we're on a big ride, there's always that moment where you're like, why am I doing this? Well, do you have any tricks up your sleeve for how you're going to manage those moments?
I'm going to stop for a few minutes, scream at Chris, swear a bit, and then just keep trucking forward and I'll make it through.
What is it that you like about bikepacking? Why are you doing this?
I like being crusty. I like being outside in the elements. Camping in a little tiny tent just makes me feel small, and somehow that feels good.
All right, Nico. Well, we're going to be following your dot.
Thank you. Yes, I'll be sharing it on Instagram.
Great. Okay. Well, we'll talk to you when you're done.
Cool. See you then.
What a phenomenal guy. Like, I just love his energy. You know, last year he was a recipient of one of the gifted tickets, which is actually, we didn't really talk about it, but we could touch on it. And I think people know about
sure.
it. But the gifted ticket idea was to grow the community where, you know, people from marginalized groups might be hesitant to join or try something like bikepacking, because there's a steep entry into the sport. You know, you got to get your bike, you got to get bags, and then to attend a summit like this and, you know, spend $100 or more and camp and buy food and all these things for something you're not sure is going to interest you is definitely prohibitive to a lot of people out there, or it doesn't make sense, you know. I started the gift a ticket idea is that people could donate an extra ticket that would go towards somebody from a marginalized group, whether they're LGBTQ, visible minorities, or even somebody who's a student that just can't afford to dump, you know, some money onto a weekend like this. And Nico was one of those recipients last year. And he was so thankful and so kind. And it was just phenomenal to see his, you know, love of the sport and to be part of this. And he also won one of the good prizes last year, a Dismount Bike Shop gift card. And was able to buy a bunch of stuff that, you know, helped him out with bikepacking. And he was back this year with the goal of riding the 400 and with a pretty good setup, albeit a little bit heavy. And he went out there and he did his best. And it was cool. It was fun to watch.
Yeah. Nico is fun. We've been out riding together since the summit. Nico was in Mall St. Marie with us last weekend.
Oh, nice.
He was a great guide, I have to say.
Yeah, he pointed out all the worst spots. This sucked. Yeah, this is where I was yelling at Chris and saying,
much.
I hate him.
He literally did actually say that, but definitely, I'm sure, with love in his heart.
Yeah.
And great guide, very supportive, and a really fun guy to ride with. So thanks for sharing your story a little bit with us before you set out on that ride.
Yeah, thank you, Nico.
We appreciate it.
That is the summit in a nutshell. It was it's always a lot of fun to be there. I mean, it's a lot of work to put on for myself. And I think I remember saying to your partner, I was like, oh man, you know, it'd be amazing is to go to a bike pack summit that you don't organize. And he goes, yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, because it's a lot of work. But I do, I'm getting better at running the event where I can actually, you know, mingle more and spend more time with people and also make those connections on my part, because it's hard. It's a lot going on that weekend, but.
Well, and a huge shout out to Seema.
Yes, my wife. Wonderful that she's phenomenal. She, you know, she likes to say, I don't really do anything, or not me, but she doesn't do anything. She's like, I'm not really involved in the decision making. Like Chris talked to her about everything, but you know, the extra hours that go into raising her daughter when I'm checked out and focused on bike pack summits, definitely makes a difference.
Oh yeah. And the little details, like I feel like there's always hot coffee and those sorts of things. And she's always moving around in the background, taking notes, helping with the draws. And yeah, we're grateful to you.
Yeah. And actually she wants a gravel bike now. She has an e-bike. She has a folding bike and a fat bike, but now she wants a gravel bike and she wants to try more bike packing related stuff, maybe less with me, more with other people that she's not going to feel so stressed around, which is totally understandable because, you know, I
know some people.
but yeah, she's getting a Panorama Anticosti. So we're going to build her up an Anticosti.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, there's always a place for her in our group for sure. We're moderately paced and a ton of fun.
Yeah. That's
our value proposition.
There we go. We'll get her out with you. And she also wants to ride with this Persian group of ladies riders and get out on some of these evening rides, and that'll help build up her, nice. Her base skills. And yeah, so I'm going to be going to pick up my new Katahdin frame in the next week or so, or maybe just after Canada Day. And I'll be buying her frame as well at the same time. So then the fun starts, building new bikes.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I'm so envious. This next summer is new bike summer for me. Not, I have to wait, and I'm still looking for the perfect setup. So that's, I have some questions for you down the road.
Cool.
But this has been fun. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Chris,
thanks so much for coming back on the podcast again, Joanne, round two.
And maybe we'll do it again sometime. Maybe if there are any events going on in the city, if I'm around for the Log Driver's Waltz, maybe we could take the mobile recording unit and chat with a few people there.
Yeah, it's something I had actually considered. The first time it popped into my head was right around the Wendigo when I told Cameron. It was such a suffer fest this year, this Fat Bike Ultra, that I was like, I'm not coming next year. But if I do, maybe I'll just come with my mobile recorder and just talk to people on bikes. And then you approached me about the idea of doing this episode. And I was like, wow, like other people think kind of like I do. And so you took that on, and it was really appreciated. It's something I could not have done at the summit. I would never have had the time. And I really, really appreciate your willingness to be involved. So thank you.
Well, it's been fun. All right. Well, have an awesome rest of your summer.
All right. You don't have to hang up, but I will end the podcast. So thank you so much. Talk to you soon and keep on pedaling.
Okay.
I want to end the show by thanking all my listeners once again for the emails and comments I regularly receive from you. It really helps motivate me and keep me going with this project and to continue sharing people's amazing stories. If you have any comments or questions, you can email me at chris@bikepackadventures.ca or go to bikepackadventures.ca and shoot me a message through the contact form. You can also check out the webpage for past podcast episodes, bikepacking routes throughout Canada, blog posts, videos, and touring tips. Lastly, I'd like to once again thank all the individuals and companies that are supporting the podcast. Head over to bikepackadventures.ca/partners for some amazing deals. If you're enjoying the show and would like to become a supporting member, head over to www.patreon.com/bikepackadventures to sign up. Patreons get to enjoy early access and ad-free podcast episodes. You can also support the show by sending a one-time donation through PayPal. This money all goes back into the podcast, helping me to cover the costs associated with running the show, buy new equipment when necessary, and continue to produce the high-quality content that you've become accustomed to. Much appreciated, and keep on pedaling.